now, but I must have become reasonably fluent, because by the end of my Abyssinian odyssey, I was conversing with Abs who had no Arabic. Even in the first week, with Ulaba's tuition, I had enough to haggle with, for I remember at one farm I got 2 guinea fowls and a mess of kid meat for 2 salts, which she assured me was well below the going rate. She stayed far out of sight with the lead beast whenever I went shopping, and since my foreign garb and eccentric vocabulary seemed to excite no interest, let alone suspicion, I began to think her fear of Yando's rascals spreading word of our coming might be groundless. She shook her head and said it would be different beyond the Takazi River. Theodore will be on the watch for us down yonder, you may be sure. Hereabouts the folk care nothing for him and his policies, and they are used to foreigners far stranger than an Indian horse-coper. She told me that only a couple of years before a Neapolitan lunatic named de Bisson had invaded this region, hoping to found a kingdom. He'd had a rabble of mercenaries, uniformed, bemedalled and armed to the teeth, and his beauteous wife in the full fig of a suave cavalryman, red breeches, kepi and all. But the local tribes had given them the right about, and he and his gang had been lucky to get out alive, much the worse for wear. He'd tried to sue the Egyptian government for not supporting him, without success, and retired to the Riviera in disgust.
"After such a portent, who is going to think twice about a mere wanderer from Hindustan?" says Ulaba. "Whatever befalls later, all is well now. So let us be thankful and travel well together."
So we did. But if that ride to the Takazi passed without disaster, it was thanks to her woodcraft. She was an even better Jankada than Speedy had said, with that strange gift that you get in the half-wild, like Bridger and Carson, of being able to sense a living presence long before she'd seen or heard it. Time and again she turned us aside into cover of rocks or undergrowth where we waited until, sure enough, a few minutes later, a camel train or a party of peasants would heave in view and pass by. And once she saved our hide altogether, detecting the approach of a gang of slave traders, armed and mounted, lashing along a wretched coffle of women and boys. As we lay watching, one of the boys collapsed, and when flogging didn't revive him, the gang rode on another 30 yards or so, when two of them, laughing and plainly challenging each other, turned in their saddles and used the feebly stirring form for target practice, hurling their lances and hitting him, too, at that distance. They retrieved their lances from the dying boy's body, yelling with delight, and galloped after their companions. I was as shocked by their accuracy as by their callousness, but Ulaba merely remarked that a Gala warrior could hit any target up to 50 yards with a spear or a knife, or even a stone snatched up at random.
"Those bastards were Galas," cries I, astonished. "But they're your people, ain't they? Why, they may know where Mastiat's to be found. Why did you not—"
"Bid them good day." "I thought of it," says she. "When I recognize their leader, one of those who speared the boy, as my cousin. But he is an Ambo Gala, a subject of Queen Wakiti. And while he and some other of my relatives may well prefer me, or even Mastiat as monarch of all Gala, for no one loves Wakiti, a sour old bitch. Still, he is a slave trader after all, and I would fetch a splendid price at El Khartoum, and even more," she added complacently, "at Djibouti or Zanzibar. The coast buyers have finer discernment than the Sudanese."
"Holy smoke! Do you mean he'd sell you? His kinswoman? And a chief's wife?"
"He would sell his own mother, and quite probably has. And if I am kin and half-royal, still I have the poor taste to wed a Christian. No, he would surely have sold me, and you. A white eunuch would be a novelty in Arabia."
I almost fell over.
"A white? I ain't a bloody eunuch."
"You would have been, if they had seen us. Did you not mark the baubles which decorated their lances? Those were the genitals of prisoners and enemies."
A discouraging tidbit of information, you'll allow. And if I'd seen the remotest chance of a flight to safety, or even known where the hell I was, I might well have turned tail on the spot, Napier or no Napier. But, being entirely out of reckoning, I'd no choice but to follow on, trusting to luck, and consoling myself that there were worse travelling companions than a long-legged expert savage who's taken a passionate fancy to you. That's the best of memory. When terrors and hardships no longer matter, and I can look back and still see her reclining by the stream, dabbling her toes as she anoints those sleek limbs with her cosmetic oil, until they gleam like bronze in